What's up, guys? This is Justin Coffin for the 330 Sports Show. Today is Tuesday, November 9th, 2021. We are broadcasting live from downtown Youngstown, Ohio at Youngstown Studios. Make sure to follow Youngstown Studios on Facebook and YouTube and my page at the 330 Sports Show on Facebook, on Instagram, and Twitter. So what we're going to get into today, we're going to get into the Cleveland Browns victory over the Cincinnati Bengals. We're going to recap a lot of what happened in the NFL this past weekend. We're going to talk about the Buckeyes. We're going to talk about college football. The latest college football committee rankings will come out tonight about 8 o'clock. And towards the end of the show, we will also do our top five Tuesday list. It's kind of a good one today. We're going to, it was inspired by daylight savings time. So I'll just leave it at that, but not sure why daylight savings time still is a thing. So we're going to get into that in our top five Tuesday. And we'll also check in with the Cavs and some other stuff too. So let's start with the Cleveland Browns and the Cincinnati Bengals. Great game this past weekend, the Battle of Ohio. We busted the slump, Jim Nance and Tony Romo. We were 0-8 going into this game. We are now 1-8. We have ended the streak. So, you know, finally we get our revenge over those two, you know, broadcasting the games. And again, I think Jim Nance does a great job. Tony Romo was actually pretty positive on Sunday, but I thought he did okay for the most part. But this was basically our biggest... most impressive complete game of the season, both sides of the ball, offensively, defensively, in a 41-16 victory. Joe, your thoughts about Sunday's game?
Well, you and I going into the game kind of predicted that our offense was going to be on the stage. Mm-hmm. It's either going to be what we thought it was, yeah, or it was going to flounder. And I believe that the offense, that was its natural state right
Absolutely.
There.
Absolutely. Yeah, you could tell it was kind of just in rhythm. They didn't even touch the ball, though, for the first like 11 I minutes know, of the right? game. And it was weird. But as soon as they did, they went down, they scored a touchdown. And, you know, they just seemed to be, like you said, in rhythm. And you even, you know, I'll give you credit last week because you said on Thursday's show, if they cut ties with OBJ, then they're going to go in motivated. They're going to not be distracted. And they did exactly what right. you said. Yep. So hats off to you on that. And, you know,
and I won some money. Yeah. On my brownies, they win me $100 when on these kind of games.
And I mean, pull it off. Let's hopefully let's keep that riding. Let's keep that riding. But as I mentioned, the Browns did not even touch the ball the first 11 minutes of the game. They had that awesome pick six by Denzel Ward. Probably his signature play as a Cleveland Brown. And that was kind of cool because Joe Burrow for the Bengals obviously used to be an Ohio State quarterback before he transferred to LSU. Denzel Ward was an Ohio State Buckeye and, you know, kind of picked on his own, his old teammate there. And
I'll tell you, these stupid penalties, though, are going to yes. kill them. I mean, mm-hmm. I love the fact that they came back from it and serve a consequence for some of those, but mm-hmm. it's so dumb because they're not necessary.
You're totally right. And we'll get to the, I don't have the exact numbers on the penalties, but they had another, like, I think it was 10 penalties in this game, which I think the Bengals had 4. So yeah, definitely a lot of unforced errors, we'll say, the Browns are committing, lining up off sides, just doing, you know, formational things that are stupid and you don't even give yourself a chance before the play even starts.
Yeah.
So, but listen to this, a couple of interesting facts about this game. Browns 70, the Bengals 70 plays in this game to only 46 for the Cleveland Browns. So the Browns scored 41 points on only having 46 offensive points. Now 7 of those points were on defense, and 6 more in addition to that were from turnovers. But we talked about turnovers and how the Browns were not forcing them early in the season. The Browns were +3 in this game, so they forced Burrow into 2 interceptions, and Jamar Chase fumbled the ball. So you know, the Browns were able to get the short fields and in one case a pick six to really flip the game.
And I'm telling you that Burrow didn't force anything into like weird plays. That was all like those turnovers were earned. I think they just had great coverages on them.
I agree. Yeah. Greg Newsome is showing he's well worth that first round draft pick.
Yeah, for sure.
And, you know, Greedy Williams left a little bit banged up, but I think Denzel Ward really showed why he, you know, should be the Browns' main dude on the field, especially in the secondary. And then you got AJ Green stepping up, you know, when Greedy Williams went out as your slot guy, and Troy Hill, the guy from right here in Youngstown, you know, eventually, you know, he lived here. I'm going to have to get Troy Hill's whole backstory. Maybe we can try to reach out to him to see if we can even get him, on the show in the off season. But he, you know, was a kid from Youngstown, went to the University of Oregon, undrafted free agent, becomes this really nice player with the Rams, and now back home with Cleveland Browns and doing great things. Cool stat here. The Browns are 8-1 when Nick Chubb runs for 100 or more yards under Kevin Stefanski. They are 11-3 when he runs for 80 or more yards. So I thought that was really cool because, I mean, Nick Chubb is your workhorse, and we'll get to more Nick Chubb news here in a minute. I know we might not, you know, we're going to stay positive. Well, that's a bad term too. Let me reword that. That's a bad, bad pun there. Yeah. Let's stay optimistic about Nick Chubb for Sunday.
Honestly, even like when he was on fire, it was because he could go back and forth with Kareem Hunt. Mm-hmm. He doesn't even have Kareem Hunt, and he had that breakaway game.
Exactly. So, you know, obviously we've talked about OBJ a lot, you know, not being a distraction. He is in the waiver wire in the NFL. And what that means is he is basically the priority goes to the team with the worst record. Right now, that's the Detroit Lions. They're 0-8. And then it's like Houston and Jacksonville. And it, you know, then it slightly goes up and up and up. So any team right now can claim him. If they claim him, I don't exactly know what the financials are. I think they'll end up paying him what the Browns wouldn't.
I think it's four. Him. I think they got to pay four? Half.
Yep. Okay. All right. So whatever, you know, whatever that team would be on the hook for if they claim him. If he goes unclaimed, that team can sign him for the league minimum if they want. The Browns would pay him X amount. And again, I don't know the financials, but he has the right to choose where he goes. And, you know, I was looking at the Browns schedule. I'm like, he could sign with New England. He could sign with Las Vegas. He could sign with the Ravens. He could sign with a lot of teams.
Was there any stipulations in that close down contract where he ends up?
I don't believe so. I think he can kind of choose his path, and you know what? Whatever. Like, we got this victory on Sunday. Let's take little victories by, you know, kind of coming together as a team. And it is what it is. You know,
did you hear his threat though?
A certain team, if they claim him, go ahead and you say it.
Yeah. So if any team that's not a championship contender claims him, there's going to be problems.
And that just shows you right there.
He's a dick.
Exactly. That shows you right there why you should not want OBJ on your roster. The one team I have heard a lot of noise about, which would be fine with me because we wouldn't play them, would be the Seattle Seahawks. And, you know, maybe he likes Russell Wilson. Maybe he likes DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett and thinks he can fit in there, but whatever. Good riddance to Odell. Oh, yeah. See you later. You know, it's unfortunate it didn't work out. And by all accounts, his teammates really did like him and he was a good guy. But, you know, I put on this graphic, you know, substance over style, and this classic meme of, hey, you know, Baker's with his former girlfriend, OBJ. Now he's looking at the new, hot thing at DPJ. So we'll take DPJ over OBJ any day.
He's got skills. He's fast.
Exactly.
I mean, stretch the field.
Exactly. Now, a couple other things. You know, the Browns persevered through that, you know, for this big, big win. You know, as Joe said, this could have divided the locker room. They could have been very distracted, but they were able to, you know, keep persevering and getting through. Baker Mayfield, 14-21 on the day, 218 yards, 2 touchdowns. Nick Chubb, 14 rushes for 137 yards, so nearly 10 yards a carry, 2 touchdowns. And he also had 2 catches for 26 yards. Donovan Peoples-Jones, as we just mentioned, two catches, but that 160 yarder that was awesome. Perfect play action, perfect ball by Baker. And that's why the rhythm and timing of this offense that you hear about and hear about and hear about are so important, because from what we understood, you know, and I'm no football coach guru, where, you know, I don't know the ins and outs of route running and stuff like that, but with Kevin Stefanski's offense, it is so predicated on running the ball and those wide receivers blocking and getting to a spot where Baker can trust them. If OBJ was freelancing and doing his own thing and Baker can't count on him being at the spot he wants, then you know, that totally throws off the offensive rhythm. So, and you know, maybe he's looking elsewhere or not doing what he's supposed to. But
you know who won me over on this game?
Yeah.
David Njoku. I almost thought that he was a foregone conclusion. Mm-hmm. He was going to be gone the first chance that he got.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched him play in that offense as a comfortable, you know, receiver, a comfortable player right now.
I really, really like Njoku. And I think he will play big in these games down the stretch, because he's a big target. He's athletic. And the Browns drafted him, if you remember, like, what, 4 years ago in the first round. He has that natural ability. He had some drops early on in his career, and he had an injury early on in his career. But he is showing, like you said, that he's all in, I think, with the Browns. And, you know, he's trying to make that money for the next contract as well.
And so, I saw some blocks that he put on that were killer.
Mm-hmm.
Killer blocks.
So, you know, as long as
he's a good looking dude, he'll do well.
As long as he keeps stepping up and doing what he's supposed to, we'll take it all day. So 8 different receivers caught passes: DPJ, Landry, Chubb, Harrison Bryant, Demetric Felton, Njoku, Anthony Schwartz, and Austin Hooper, all with catches this game. So pretty awesome for the Browns, a great showing. And by the way, go back to that image real quick. Did you see that guy they focused in on?
That's so screen? Sad.
I mean, that, he literally, you know, and we have those people in Cleveland that dress up like, you know, dogs and God knows what. But that guy on Twitter apparently was like, you know, the camera was focused on him. First of all, you're a grown-ass man dressed up like a cat. You're going to get made fun of. So if you're wearing stuff like that, don't be, don't go out and say, well, you know, quit making fun of me. It's like, no, you're putting yourself out there. If you're dressed as a grown-ass man in a cat costume and face paint, you're going to get made fun of, and you deserve
everything.
His
mascara was on point, though.
He looks good. He looks like a sad, sad cat, and we love the sad cat over the happy cat there. So, all right, let's move on to the Browns defense. The Browns defense really, really stepped up. Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase have been a great hookup this whole year. They held them in check. Joe Burrow, 28 of 40, 282 yards. So a decent by the numbers passing day. However, 0 touchdowns and 2 picks. He was thrown for I think he threw for 2 touchdowns in every game this season before that. And, you know, he has a tendency to throw some interceptions here and there. Also, Ja'Marr Chase, who has been one of the NFL's best receivers on the season, was limited to 6 catches on 13 targets. So 7 incompletions worked in there for only 49 yards. I think he had around 800 coming into the game. So great job by, again, we mentioned Greg Newsom, Denzel Ward, and others. Denzel Ward in that game, maybe the play of the season, maybe the play of his career, that pick 6, 99-yard interception return for a touchdown. The Bengals drove the length of the field. They got down to like the 2 or 3 yard line, and actually a penalty sort of saved
us.
2
of them, weren't they back to back?
Yeah, I think you know, there was an offsides and some other penalty, and then you know, that would have forced the Bengals to kick a field goal. That's the one time where it actually worked out in our favor, but we'll still say from this point forward, no more penalties. But great game by him. Miles Garrett continues to add to the sack totals, 1.5 sacks on the game.
I didn't notice him getting in a whole lot. I mean, he made use of it when he got by, but he didn't get in.
I think what happens is, you know, on those longer drives, he goes so hard and they try to work him out for 2 or 3 plays where he can kind of catch his breath. So, you know, I'm going to compare this to NBA Jam, just because we brought that in earlier. But you know, in NBA Jam, you kind of press the turbo button and the guy's shoes are red. Yeah. He's got this extra energy for a while. And then all of a sudden it fades and then they're not as fast. So I feel like once they get that breather back and you build up that stamina again, that's kind of Myles Garrett. Like,
well, that, what they need the to do is take Clowney and like they coordinate between the two of them. Who's going to put mm-hmm. the red shoes on that time? And one's going to take a breather or yeah. break.
If know? They're both off the field, it's trouble for the Browns sure. because Tack McKinley was back, but he was really limited in this game. But one real big, big positive, and I think this is going to be a positive the rest of the season going forward, was John Johnson III. He was like their big free agent signing in the offseason. And what they have done now, they have taken Grant Delpit and they've taken Ronnie Harrison. And they're saying, like, you know, we're trusting you guys to kind of take the back portion of the defense. John Johnson has been creeping up kind of as like a hybrid linebacker. And that's where I think he's most comfortable. So I think if he can play the spot where he's most comfortable, that really opens up the defense to do a lot of good things.
What about when JOK comes back?
And JOK is actually cleared to be brought off the IR. I think, you know, the more of those guys you can have, the better. So right. it's like,
but does that change that new philosophy where,
not necessarily, because I think you can still use those guys as one of them. You know, I'd probably use JOK as a linebacker on, I would say, the weak side, because those are the guys that get more tackles generally. But he just let him fly all over the right. field. And if you can have a hybrid linebacker safety on the field and another couple safeties as opposed to three linebackers, I'll take my defensive backs on the field all day over the linebackers, just because the way the game is played, you know, right. it's more spread out. There's a lot more quick offense and stuff.
Well, our
like
defense,
that.
I feel, have been effective on this new philosophy. So mm-hmm. the JOK comes back and they shift it up and we can't do coverages as well as we did before.
That's true.
Same thing with the running game. Like, for some reason, when we got studied as being a running team and they would stack us up and whatever, we mm-hmm. change our game plan. We were not the same offense.
You're right. So, you know, hopefully it's one of those leagues. The NFL is week to week. So, you know, and we're going against Belichick this week. So we'll talk more about him on Thursday, but, you know, he is the master game planner and, you know, he's going to have something cooked up for the Browns, I'm sure. And we'll talk, you know, again, about the good news and the bad news of today, as we go forward. But, just a couple more, you know, we mentioned Troy Hill. He had two sacks. He at one point was credited with three sacks, but I think they changed that up a little bit. But he also had two tackles for loss, which was great. And Anthony Walker, the linebacker they brought in from the Colts in the offseason, the middle linebacker, is had 14 tackles on the day. So a couple other just news and notes for the Browns as we go forward. The Browns lock up Wyatt Teller today. Yes. They signed him to a four-year extension. And this is, again, some of that money, I think, if they would have brought OBJ back. Now, unfortunately, you know, and I'm one of those people, I love Jarvis Landry. I don't know if he's going to be back next year with the Browns. He is, you know, he's like a $15 million cap hit for the Browns. But if they release him, or maybe they can restructure his contract and bring him back at a cheaper rate, instead of just going to free agency. But Wyatt Teller back with the Browns. Hopefully you can keep that cohesion of the best offensive line in the National Football League together. And, you know, he's now the second highest paid guard in all of the NFL, which is just great. And he has talked about, you know, the Cleveland fans love their team. You know, they love their team. You know, what team, like, really knows the ins and outs of an offensive line as well? You know, those aren't guys you generally are like, yeah, you know, the offensive line. You got, you know, you got JC Treader, you got Wyatt Teller, you got Wills, you got Betonio, you got Conklin, you got all these guys. Those guys mean a lot to the city because they know how hard they work, and they know Browns fans are very generally smart and understand this team's built on the run and protecting the quarterback. So that's a great move, especially long-term for the Browns. You lock him up and, you know, you have a few other guys you got to deal with, but that can be done. You worry about that in the off season.
And I like when you take some of these linemen and you pay up for them. I remember we had that center that was all pro that we didn't pay up for. We ended up losing
Alex Mack.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. And so like when we take some of these guys, and even who's that guy that was played for Cincinnati, Ogunjobi or no.
Ogunjobi. Yep.
Mm-hmm. I liked him as a player. I thought mm-hmm. he was so talented, but to have shed him and then have to face him. I mean, that's a rough deal.
Exactly. And that's kind of the brutal business of the NFL. You know, a lot of times you build these guys up, and then when they get good, they go in free agency, and there's only so many guys you can pay a premium rate to. That's why a guy like OBJ making $14.5-15 million.
It's four roster spots,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. You can't, would you rather have, you know, and maybe when he was a rookie, this answer would be different, but would you rather have Wyatt Teller for 4 years, or would you rather have OBJ for 4 years? I think that's a pretty clear answer right now.
Yeah, and if they were like other Cleveland teams, you get beyond where they start making the big money, they cut you and bring in some rookie. I'm so glad they
don't
do that.
And the Browns are going to have some tough decisions, just like every other team does in the offseason of, you know, Denzel Ward, what do we do with him? Baker, do we lock him up long-term? There's going to be some other guys, Austin Hooper, David Njoku, you know, people like that. So there's going to be
frustrating
decisions.
Thing when we sucked, like, and mm-hmm. we had so much cap space. We mm-hmm. were wondering, like, why aren't you coming off that money? What, I mean, is the mm-hmm. goal here to lose every game, but to have money in the bank?
Right. Exactly. And the good thing now, or maybe it's a bittersweet thing about being so good, is you have so many good players on the roster. Unfortunately, you're going to lose some, but if you trust in Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski and the player development people, then you can bring in younger guys at cheaper deals and hopefully sign those veterans and like keystone type pieces that you want to keep around for a long, long time. So we talked about OBJ. We got about 8 minutes until he clears waivers. I'm guessing if no team picked him up, we'll find out where he ends up.
I'm going to check to see if he's been claimed.
Okay. All right. So we will see if he has, you know, if he's going to get picked up. My chances are if I had to bet on it, it's either going to be the Seattle Seahawks pick him up, or he clears waivers and then is free to go wherever he wants, which again, who knows?
Do you have a guess? I mean, besides Seattle, do you think like just, if he clears?
Just because he's kind of a dick, you know, and again, he's probably a nice person, but you know, just to kind of stick it to Cleveland, I could see him either going to New England or Baltimore.
Okay.
I'm not
think
saying...
dicks go to Dallas. I really do. I think every dick that I've ever known gravitates towards Dallas for some reason.
They have a really very good receiving core, but if they can pick him up for cheap and just add him to the fray. And that was where his best game as a Brown came in Dallas last year. So let's get to the bad news though of the day. So Nick Chubb and Dmitri Felton, and your boy John Kelly. So three running backs are on the COVID-19 list for testing positive. Apparently John Kelly had it, you know, running backs, when they go and watch the tape and stuff, they're in these little pods. So I'm sure they're all in. So wherever D'Ernest Johnson is, you go put him in a safe space. You go put him in a panic room or something, because you cannot lose all of your running backs. And, you know, you need someone to be able, like, because, I mean, John Kelly's a practice squad guy. He's not even available. So what do? You might have to bring in somebody off the street for a week. And Kareem Hunt, I don't think, is going to be back this week. I think he's still another week, maybe two away. So, you know, it's up in the air. It's up in the air with the running back situation. But again, if the Browns and Nick Chubb and John Kelly and Dmitri Felton, the rule is if you're vaccinated, you have to get two negative. That's why I said we're not going to use the word positive news. Mm-hmm. But you have to get two negative COVID-19 tests within 24 hours of each other, or 24 hours apart from each other. So, you know, maybe on Friday, test negative, Saturday, test negative, then he can play on Sunday. But again, who knows? I don't know the timetable of when this all happened. He obviously played on Sunday, so he was fine then, but I don't know. Remains to be seen. We'll have an update on Thursday, I'm sure, as we go forward. But let's check in on the Browns schedule and what is left So right now we're sitting at 5-4, coming off, you know, we were coming off struggle there, but a big win over Cincinnati. You have New England this Sunday. That is a huge game. New England is playing some good football right now. You're one freebie on the schedule, Detroit after that. And then you have back-to-back games with the Baltimore Ravens with a bye. That, if you're watching, that line kind of divides, is the bye week for the Browns. So technically you play the Ravens back-to-back weeks.
We
so,
did that last year with Pittsburgh and we kicked the crap out
exactly,
of them. Right?
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, these are some huge weeks. And the NFL, like I said, is a week-to-week league. You have to focus on the opponent at hand. And the Browns, it feels like it's not a normal week if there's not some sort of adversity. You know, we've had OBJ, we've had the injuries, we had Case Keenum starting, we had all of our running backs out. Last year, we had all of our receivers out. Kevin Stefanski can't coach in the playoff game because he has COVID. You know, it was like this team is built and has been through so much adversity. So I think they're going to be fine. However, we know they're so much reliant on that run game. And Nick Chubb finally looks back to healthy and, you know, had 140 some yards this past weekend. And, you know, so hopefully, fingers crossed, we get him back. I wouldn't count on it though. So,
all right, question for you.
Yeah.
How many wins do we get to really ensure that we're a playoff team?
I think you have to get to 10.
10 at least.
I think there's an outside chance someone could get in with 9, but because the AFC is going to kind of cannibalize itself because all those teams are going to be playing each other and, you know, one team's going to get a win, but another team's going to get a loss. So I think there's going to be a lot of teams middling towards the end at, you know, 8-9, 9-8. You know, 10-7, which sounds so weird because you're used to saying the numbers that add up to 16, but yeah, it's going to be very interesting. So let's actually look at this playoff picture and, you know, you tell me what you think. Because if you look at just the AFC North, Ravens 6-2, Steelers, who have now won 4 in a row, you know, kind of pulled one out of their hat last night, 5-3, Browns 5-4, Bengals 5-4. So just in the AFC North, every team is over 500. That's incredible. That
we said it was going to be strong, I mean, though.
And look at the AFC West, too. 5-3, Las Vegas, 5-3, LA, 5-4 now Denver, and 5-4 now KC. So every team in that division is 500 or better, which is incredible. Again, you really don't see that. This is very rare. So right now, if the playoffs began, Titans 1, Ravens 2, Chargers 3, Bills 4, Raiders 5, Steelers 6, Patriots 7, and then just outside that would be Chiefs, Browns, Broncos, and then the Colts are kind of hanging in there at 4-5. So I think the Jets, the Jags, the Texans, and the I put the Titans on there. I don't know why I put the Titans on there. Yeah, anyway, the Titans should not be on there, but the Titans are for sure in. But this should be very, very interesting going forward, especially in the AFC North, which we focus on a ton. Real quick look at the NFC. You know, Green Bay, well, actually Arizona's sitting there with the best record in football, 8-1. Green Bay coming off a loss, but still 7-2. Tampa and Dallas, both there at 6-2. And then the Rams, Saints, and Falcons would be your wild card teams, and just a ton of teams in the hunt there. But their teams in the hunt are not as good as the AFC teams. It's just going to be a very, very interesting finish as we go forward. So I want to give a real quick recap of basically this past weekend in the NFL. So again, week 9 recap, the Steelers moved to, listen to this number, 215-0-2 at home when leading by 14 points or more in the fourth quarter. They really narrowly escaped defeat. Justin Fields had a phenomenal game for the Bears, led them down, actually took the lead with about, I can't remember, it was about a minute and 40 left, I think, on the clock. The Steelers were able to drive down, get a field goal, and then the Bears actually had a shot at a really, really long field goal to win, but just came up just short. But the Steelers, again, have won 4 straight. They go on to 20 29-27 victory. And again, the refs were big Steeler fans, it felt like, on Monday Night Football. They really, really, there was a ridiculous taunting call in that game. We'll talk about that later. All right, let's go to our next game. Josh Allen of the Jacksonville Jaguars actually intercepted, sacked, and recovered a fumble from Josh Allen of Buffalo, which was, you know, just kind of a neat little thing there. But Jacksonville and Urban Meyer upset the Bills 9-6 in one of the lowest scoring games in the NFL that I can remember in a long, long time. Next game, let's go to Ravens and Vikings. The Ravens come back from 14 points down to beat the Minnesota Vikings in overtime. Lamar's, that's his third comeback win this season. That is something he really didn't do well in the past, but has been very, very good at this year. They came back and beat the Chiefs. And there's one other game in there that I think it was maybe the Colts that they took care of in a comeback victory. So nice win for the Ravens to take the lead in the AFC North. Also, in some dominant performances, the Titans dominated the LA Rams in LA 28-16. Aaron Rodgers did not play, and the Packers fall to the Kansas City Chiefs 13-7 in Jordan Love's debut. Los Angeles Chargers sneak by the Philadelphia Eagles 27-24 in a really close game. And some other week nine recaps. We had the Broncos in a real big upset, 30-16 over the Dallas Cowboys. We had the Atlanta Falcons 27-25 over, now the no more Drew Brees, no more Jameis Winston. Obviously they knew no Drew Brees coming into the season, but a lot of banged up players down in New Orleans, but still Atlanta comes back and wins 27-25. And also a pretty big upset, the New York Giants come back and beats the Las Vegas Raiders 23-16. And some dominant performances, the Browns opponent 24-6, Patriots take out the Panthers. The Colts on Thursday night beat the Jets 45-30, and the Cardinals, without Kyler Murray, whooped on the 49ers 31-17. So kind of a quick look at the NFL from this past weekend. A lot of craziness to ensue as we get, about halfway through the season as we go forward. So let's check in with the Ohio State Buckeyes. And what they did this past weekend. Ohio State went into Lincoln, Nebraska last weekend, did come out with a 26-17 victory, which moves Ohio State to 8-1. Nebraska, who is 3-7, but it's a crazy 3-7 because they have lost every game this year by, I believe it's 8 points or less, which is just, incredible. They're like finding different ways to lose, and but they are not as bad as their record indicates. So in this game, CJ Stroud 36 of 54. Ohio State did not establish the run game very well, so had to throw the ball around a lot. 36 of 54, 405 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 picks, his first interception in a while. Also, as I mentioned, Ohio State did not established the run very well, but Travion Henderson, 21 carries for 92 yards, an okay day for him and most backs by, in comparison, but not his best day by any means. But listen to this, Jackson Smith Njigba, 15 catches, which set an Ohio State record. The previous record was 14 by David Boston, and 240 yards, which is also second most in a game. And I mentioned Ohio State struggled. So Travion Henderson had 92 yards. Ohio State as a team only had 90 yards. So between sacks and losses and some other backs carrying the ball, they did not have a great rushing game as a team, but still roughly 500 yards of offense for the Buckeyes. Not a terrible day. Noah Ruggles, 4 for 4. He is a transfer from North Carolina. He's come in and really locked up the kicking spot for the Buckeyes. And also, real quick note on the Ohio State defense. They had 5 sacks on the day, which now ranks them number 1 in the country with, I believe it's Marshall, You know, so they're getting after the quarterback after we were a little bit worried about that in the beginning of the season. So Nebraska, again, too, with Ohio State limiting their offense, had about 200 or so yards outside of two bigger plays on the day. So pretty good job overall by the Ohio State defense. A couple things in the secondary still need cleaned up, but overall a pretty solid job. I'm going to give two Buckeye Leafs this week. One, obviously, to Jaxon Smith-Njigba. He had 15 catches, as I mentioned. Previous high, David Boston with 14, 240 yards, second all-time to Terry Glenn. Terry Glenn had 252 against Pitt back in 1995. He had one touchdown on the game, and that was the first 200-yard game receiving in Ohio State since 2004. For the season, he has 50 catches, 888 yards, which is 17.8 yards a catch, and he has four touchdowns on the season. One other Buckeye Leaf I want to give out. These guys don't get a whole lot of credit, but I'm going to give a Buckeye Leaf to Ohio State center Luke Whipler. Luke Whipler has stepped in this season and done a very, very good job at center for the Buckeyes. But the play of the game, Ohio State was only up by 6 points with about 2 minutes left. They, for some reason, dropped back to pass, and Stroud got hit and strip sacked, and the ball came loose. And luckily for Ohio State's, for their luck, they, he was able to jump on the ball, recover it, and save the game for Ohio State. If Nebraska picks that up, scoops it, and scores it, they could very well win that game. But their kicker was having some issues. So, you know, the extra point was not a given. But Nebraska, at the very least, would have tied, if not won that game, if Luke Whipler did not jump on that fumble. So, Buckeye Leaf to him. Everything is still intact for the Buckeyes, all their preseason goals, you know, win the Big Ten, get to the college football playoff, hopefully play for a national title. So all those goals are still in effect. So if we look real quick at the Big Ten standings, we're just going to focus on the East because the West is a big mess. But right now, Ohio State, Michigan State, Michigan, Penn State, Maryland, Rutgers, and Indiana are pretty much, you know, from top to bottom, your leaders. Ohio State and Michigan State are going to play in a couple weeks. Ohio State and Michigan are going to play in a couple weeks. And, you know, again, it's going to be a very, very interesting rest of the season as we go forward in the Big Ten. The college playoff football committee will meet, or has already met, but they will release their second week of playoff rankings as we go forward tonight. So I just want to kind of give you a look at what I think might happen last weekend, first of all. So actually, let's just do that. So there are only four remaining undefeated teams in all of college football: Georgia Bulldogs, the Oklahoma Sooners, the Cincinnati Bearcats, and then the UTSA Roadrunners, who are, if you're not familiar with them, that's University of Texas San Antonio. And they are in the top 20 right now, ranked based on their season. But last weekend, let me just give you a quick update. Georgia dominated Missouri. Alabama really was in a dogfight with LSU. Really, really close game. LSU had a couple opportunities to take the lead late in that game, but did not. Michigan State falls to Purdue. So number three, Michigan State falls to Purdue. Purdue will be in the top 25 this weekend, and they will be playing at Ohio State this weekend. Oregon, they struggled this weekend, picked up a 10-point victory over Washington. Ohio State, as I mentioned, struggled a little bit against Nebraska. Cincinnati struggled versus Tulsa. Now, game day was at Cincinnati. It was a big game. Cincinnati wins that game 28-20, but Tulsa literally had four cracks at it from the four-yard line and inside of that, and they weren't unable to get in. Number seven, Michigan beat Indiana. Oklahoma was on a bye this weekend. Number nine, Wake Forest lost in a very, very high-scoring game to North Carolina. And number 10, Notre Dame beats Navy. So we're just going to look at the top 10. Here's what I think is going to happen with the ratings. And I'll give you just a real quick synopsis of what I think. So I think Georgia is until Georgia loses. If Georgia loses, Georgia's going to be the clear number one team going forward. That's not up for debate. But basically 2-6 or 2-7, that's all that you can piece that together almost any way you want. So that's why I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this, because I think week to week it's going to change. But I think Oregon has looked like a better team as they've got better this season. They had a kind of a bad loss to Stanford, but they have beat Ohio State, which is probably the best win on this schedule for any team on the resume. So I'm going to put Oregon at number two. I'm going to put Oklahoma, even though they were on bye, even though they've had their struggles this year, because they are a top five or power five conference team that's undefeated. So I'm going to put Oklahoma at number three. Now, if Oklahoma handles its business, wins out, they still got games with Oklahoma State. They got the Big 12 title. I think they have Baylor this weekend as well. So if Oklahoma wins out, their resume will be fine to make it. But I think Oklahoma loses a game before this season's out. And if they lose, I think they're done. Alabama, I'm going to put at number four. I think Alabama has shown us that they are not this same team from last year, the same dominant team. And how could they be? I mean, they lost Najee Harris. They lost the Heisman Trophy winner. They lost the New England Patriots starting quarterback, Mac Jones. So they have just lost guys and guys and guys. But they continue to win and win and win. They do have one blemish on the season at Texas A&M. But if they hold serve, I think they have to beat Georgia and win the SEC and obviously win out. They still have Auburn left. But if they beat Auburn, they beat Georgia in the SEC title game. I think Alabama is in for sure. If they lose, I think they have to be out. You can't have a two-loss team and a non-conference winner in the college football playoff. I'm going to put the Buckeyes at five. Now, that is a good spot for the Buckeyes, because I think three, if not all four of those teams in front of them, I think three of the four of those teams will lose at least one game going forward, which would put the Buckeyes. I see the Buckeyes, if they went out, finishing in the number two or number three spot going forward. As long as Georgia wins, they're going to be the number one team. But, you know, you kind of want to face Georgia in the championship game and not the semifinals if you can get there. And then I have Michigan 6, Cincinnati 7, Notre Dame 8, Oklahoma State 9, and Michigan State number 10. So that's just kind of what I'm looking at. I think these are going to change and change and change as we go. But hopefully Ohio State holds serve and continues to do what it does and be dominant. They have a challenge on their hands against Purdue. Our guest on Thursday, Gary and I, will talk about the Buckeyes. We're actually both going to be down there in Columbus for that game. So we'll talk plenty about that game on Thursday. All right, let's do a quick check-in with the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Cleveland Cavaliers are right now sitting at 7-4. They have won four consecutive games. They've been, here's a cool stat, they've been an underdog in all 11 games this season and won seven of them straight up. So that's pretty awesome. Jared Allen has been named the Eastern Conference Player of the Week. That is the first time a Cavs player has been named the Eastern Conference Player of the Week since LeBron James back in 2018. On Sunday night, Ricky Rubio, this is an awesome game. 37 points, which is a career high for him. This is his 13th year in the NBA. He was 8 of 9 shooting the three-point ball, 9 assists against the Knicks in Madison Square Garden. A little bit of bad news for the Cavs. Colin Sexton, who has been their leading scorer this year, has a torn meniscus, which by what I know about the meniscus, that's probably about a 3 to 4 week injury after surgery. So I would guess he'd be back around mid to middle December. Hopefully he's back and healthy by then. Kevin Love still on your COVID list. Lauri Markkanen still on your COVID list. So Cavs are missing some big pieces and they're still getting a lot of wins right now. So good for them. As I mentioned, Colin Sexton is leading in points. Darius Garland, Jared Allen, Mobley, and Ricky Rubio. All those guys are averaging 13 points or more on the season. Jared Allen's your leading rebounder, 11.6 per game. Evan Mobley, who has absolutely been a stud, cannot say enough about this guy. And you know what's another cool fact is Jared Allen and Evan Mobley have are number one and number two in the leagues in dunks this year, which shows the guards are really setting them up for easy baskets. So great job by the Cavs. Hopefully they can keep that up. And now I know the World Series ended last week, but I did want to share this quick baseball note that I had heard. This was just a really awesome baseball note. And I'm always fascinated with numbers. So this was really cool. So Vin Scully account tweeted this out, but it said, would you believe in the year Hank Aaron passed away, who obviously was a huge Atlanta Braves star, won 44 games before the All-Star break. The Braves won 44 games after the All-Star break, and they won the World Series on the 44th week of the year. Hank Aaron, of course, wore the number 44. So just a really cool coincidence, but maybe a little bit of, divine intervention in there for the Braves season. So very, very cool stat, I thought there. All right. Now let's get to, we're going to switch from sports. Now there is a little bit of sports stuff in here, but I like to do a top five list every Tuesday. This is going to be a fun, some people might get pissed off at me. Some people might not. You know what? I don't care. We're going to have a little fun with this. So my top five Tuesday list is, how the hell is this still a thing? So we're going to start with, and these are all things I've experienced, by the way, in the past couple months. So, that's why I just thought this would be fun. So how the hell is this still a thing? First, so number five, and this is 5A because I have two financial things for number five. So number 5A, writing checks in public. I was actually at the grocery store not too long ago. And, you know, like I wasn't in that big of a hurry, but I was in a hurry enough where I didn't want to spend 5 minutes waiting in the checkout line at, I think it was Giant Eagle. So anyway, waiting in line, and someone breaks out their checkbook in front of me, and, you know, I don't know. It was like the 12 items or less line too. So it's like, you know, just because you're buying a bag of cheese doodles and a freaking pop and piece of gum or something like that, I don't need to be waiting 10 minutes for you to check out the grocery store. But again, I put check yourself before you start doing that. So unless you're writing a bill or something like that, you don't need to bring the check out to the grocery store. Get a debit card, get a credit card, pay cash. I don't care. Just don't write a check at the grocery store, or really in line anywhere. All right. So that's 5A. This is going to sound like a personal pet peeve list, which I've already done plenty of those, but we're going to have a little bit more fun with this. So 5B, another financial one, the penny. How the hell is a penny still a freaking thing? We're in 2021. Just make everything cost 5 cents or it's freaking free. Okay. There's no need. First of all, do you guys know how much it costs to make a penny? It costs 2 pennies to make 1 penny. So first of all, it costs twice as much to make as it's worth. And there was some study done where it's like 18% or 20% of all Americans have thrown pennies away, or just like, you know, you'll just throw them in the street or whatever. Just a point that it's like everybody, you know, especially in financial times where people are struggling and stuff like that. It's like the penny, though, still, how the hell is that still a thing? So that's so those are my five lists. That's my financial aspect for this. Number four, cargo shorts, cargo pants. Now, I'm going to throw myself under the bus here. I went to a Cleveland Browns game. I want to say this was like 2015 or 16. And this was probably the last time I wore cargo shorts. It was a September game, so it was warm. But this is the last time I wore or whatever a pair of cargo shorts. And I went with a couple friends. I think I went, there was 5 or 6 of us, and 2 of them were females. And those females, I trust their judgment, but the one person especially said, nice car, like in a joking, like friend type way, was like, nice cargo shorts. And I knew right away, it was so facetious. And like, so guess what I did when I got home? I took them to Goodwill. So I took those cargo shorts, and I'm sorry if anybody out there wears cargo shorts and you got a bunch of shit you got to carry around in your pockets. I apologize. This is not a personal attack on you, but cargo shorts, 2021. Why is this still a thing? And I apologize, especially if anyone in studio is wearing them and they're looking at me with disdain. So that's my number four. But I mean, I carry my phone and my wallet, sometimes my keys. I don't need 12 pockets. So that's just me. Sorry. All right. Number three, 3A. Now, this is the football aspect of this. 3A is targeting in college football. It's awful. It is terrible, terrible, terrible. I'm not saying the safety of the rule is. Now, if there's helmet-to-helmet contact, there's bad intent, that's one thing. Throw the guy out. But there are so many plays in college football that a guy is thrown out and it's an accident or there was no helmet to helmet or things like that. So that whole rule needs to be changed. So I'm going to keep that short, but targeting needs to be dropped. That should not be a thing anymore. 3B, this was something that very specific happened in the Bears-Steelers game last night and just around the NFL in general, the taunting rule in the NFL. The NFL has been, for a long, long time, has been known as the no fun league because they're simply just taking the fun out of the game. I mean, first of all, these guys are professionals now. They are not kids. They're grown-ass men. And they work extremely hard. They put their bodies and careers on the line nearly every single play. If they score a touchdown or get a sack or pick up a fumble, let them celebrate a little bit. Now, I understand if you're in somebody's face and pointing and, you know, talking trash, over top of them, that's one thing. Like, for example, the kid on the Bears last night made a sack, got Roethlisberger down. It would have forced a 4th and 14 or 4th and 15. This was a guy that was on the Steelers practice squad earlier in the year. All he did was look over to the Steelers bench and the ref flagged him. And I just thought that was absolute trash and, needed to be gone. So anyway, all right, here's where we're going to get controversial with number two. If you didn't think the cargo shorts was controversial, wait till you hear number two. This was something I personally saw the other day on a big truck driving downtown Youngstown, the freaking Confederate flag. I just want to say, hey guys, I don't know if you know this, but the war is over. The war is over. So the Confederate flag, how the hell is that still a thing in 2021? I'm pretty damn sure the state of Mississippi, that is on their state flag. So I don't know. 2021, I'm going to move on from that one. That one should be self-inflicted there. So anyway, and the last one. This is what got me thinking about this. But the number one, daylight savings time. I mean, for God's sakes, okay, it is 4:23. It is starting to get freaking dark outside. 4:23. It is November 9th. It's only getting darker for the next month and a half for like 2 or 3 minutes earlier every day until we hit December 21st, which is like the worst day of the year because it's dark at like 2:30 in the afternoon. So I'm sorry, daylight savings time, save everybody a little bit of sanity, give everybody a little bit of extra vitamin D, stop canceling this shit, end daylight savings, or what is it? Save daylight savings time, end it. I don't know what it is, but either way, daylight savings time, don't turn the clocks back. Don't turn the clocks back. So I put a little note on there. Fall back, spring forward. How about you kiss my ass? Because there ain't no rest for the wicked. So we do not like daylight savings time ending November 7th. And to me, it's just awful. I need a little bit. Everybody knows, like, I'm generally a pale person anyway, so I don't get out a whole lot. But when I go to work and it's dark, and when I get home and it's dark, that's freaking depressing. I don't know how about the rest of you guys feel, but that's to me how it feels. So, and one honorable mention that I didn't have time because this happened on the way down here. So there's this car that pulls up next to me, and it's always some asshole that's like a 25-year-old guy, pulls up next to me in this little dinky ass car, but he spent about $50,000 on his muffler system to make it just light up the whole downtown area. I mean, so how is that still a thing? That's got to go. So my apologies if I offended you, but again, I'm not really that sorry. So We're going to move on. Hopefully you had a little fun with that. Hopefully something in there was funny, and hopefully I didn't offend you. And if you wear cargo shorts, I apologize, because I mean, that's really not that bad of a thing. So anyway, we have a great guest coming in on Thursday. He is, he's just a good dude. To get serious for a second, he has been given a short time, on this earth to live. And he has put everything out there. He's very open and shares a lot of stuff, but this guy is out there doing a lot of things. He's at a ton of our local sports events. He is a Buckeye photographer, and has field access to a lot of big events. So he's going to come in and talk to us, Ohio State, Cleveland Browns, local high school football, some of his experiences. And he's going to also share his story, what he's comfortable with. So again, I wanted to, you know, have a little fun today, but end on a little bit of a serious note. But hopefully everyone enjoyed today, and we will have another great show for you on Thursday. We will see you guys then. Have a great day, and it's dark already. So we'll see you guys later.